Yeah, so
We're holding on Memvav Amud Aleph by the two dots, so
okay.
a bit above the middle of
oh,
the Amud.
Nicola?
Yeah.
Nicola covered. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep, so we're up to the next case in the Mishnah. We said nitla kaved chola. If the liver has been removed, then the animal is chayav. And actually what the Mishnah had said is if the liver is removed and nothing is left of it. So, and we discussed this briefly the other day, but now we're going to discuss in a little more detail. So the implication seems to be that if there's some of it left, even if it's not a kazayas in size, then the animal apparently would still be kosher. The problem with that is, we learn in the next Mishnah in our Perek, if the liver is removed and there's a kazayas left of it, only then is it kosher, implying that you need a kazayas left.
Why?
Less than that.
Why?
Apparently the idea is because if there's not a kazayas of it left, then it's not going to be able to, if there's a kazayas, then there's enough for the animal to be able to live. Yeah, in particular, the liver is able to regenerate. Yeah, that's I mentioned at the beginning of the parak, when we look at the Mishnah, that's how it is that people are able to donate a liver or part of it, and it regenerates afterwards, right? Okay, so what is it? So do you need a minimum kazayas or not? So the other day, we had Rav Yochanan telling us the halacha is, at least according to one opinion, that the halacha is that you need a kazayas, but still, we have two mishnayas that seem to contradict each other. Amar Rav Yosef loy kasha, so Rav Yosef says it's not a contradiction. Harab Chia, Harab Shimon Berebi. One of them represents the opinion of Rav Chia, the other one of Rav Shimon Berebi. Namely, where do we see that they had an argument on the subject? We see like this. When you had, and Rashi explains like this, when you had an animal where there was less than a kazayas, less than the liver, Rav Chia would throw it away. He held that it's true. So therefore, he's the author of the second Mishnah. The second Mishnah therefore follows his opinion that you need a kazayas. Whereas Rav Shimon Berebi makvil law. Rav Shimon Berebi would dip it. Dipping is the normal term that's used a lot of times in Shas for eating, because as Rashi explains, in general, when they ate things in those days, they usually dipped them, yeah.
That's
the expression. Makbilah means that in other words, he'd eat it. So in other words, he'd dip it in vinegar or haroisis or whatever, people would know. That's what Rashi says, yeah. So therefore, in other words, so the first Mishnah would be according to Reb Shimon Berebi, who holds that it's kosher even if there's only a little bit left. And the second Mishnah would be like Rav Chia, who says that it's kosher only if you have a kazayas. That's Rashi says, that's the explanation he heard from his rebbe. However, Rashi doesn't like that explanation, because he says, in that case, why are you using the expression Zorik law versus Makri law? You should better use the expression Matri for Makshir. What's the point of saying that he would throw it away versus that he would eat it? So therefore, Rashi explains the other way around. What it is like this. Rav Chia, when it came to a liver, never mind an animal that has a shaylan trait, it's just a regular animal, the liver of it, Rav Chia did not want to eat it. He didn't consider the liver to be something that's significant to eat, which means, therefore, so just the opposite. He's the one who holds, therefore, that the liver is not a particularly vital organ. In the sense, and obviously it's vital in some sense, but not that you need a kazayis of it left necessarily. As opposed to Rav Shimon, would say that it's a vital organ, and the Gemara tells us in Brachas, and actually we had earlier in our Masechta, in the second parak, we had an expression over there that a healthy kind of thing is to cut a piece of meat off an animal after you shechted it while the animal is still moving around, and then you wait until the animal stops moving, and then you eat it. And similarly, you have a Gemara in Brachas that mentions that any vital organ, kol nefesh meshiv nefesh, any vital organ restores a person's vitality. So therefore, Reb Shimon Berebi would eat the liver of an animal. He would make a point of eating the liver of an animal when it was available. And in modern terms, liver is a fairly healthy. That was the point. In other words, he would doubt that if there was a liver available, unlike Rav Chia, who said, I can't be bothered to eat it, Rav Shimon Berebi Dafka would eat it because it's a healthy thing to eat. Because, in other words, therefore, it comes out according to that explanation. Rav Chia didn't consider it particularly important to eat. As opposed to Rav Shimon Berebi would, so therefore it's the other way around. Rav Shimon Berebi, therefore, is the one who says that the liver is an extremely vital organ, therefore you need at least a kazayas of it left, otherwise you don't have enough for the animal to live on for the time being. So he'd be the author of the second Mishnah. So this is, again, Rashi's own explanation, as opposed to his Rebbeim's explanation, that it's the other way around. His Rebbeim's explanation is that the first Mishnah is according to Rav Shimon Berebi, who would eat from an animal that had less than a kazayas left, and the second Mishnah is according to the Priya, who would not. Now, according to Rashi's own explanation, it's the other way around. In general, Rav Chiya is the first Mishnah, because Rav Chiya is the one who says the liver is not so vital that you need a kezayis of it left. And Rav Shimon ben Gabi would be the second Mishnah, who says it's an extremely vital organ, you need a kezayis of it left. And therefore, he'd make a point of eating it when it was available. Okay. And the Gemara says, the simonach, you simon to remember which one did which, is the expression, ashirin mekamtin, the rich people are stingy. Rav Shimon ben Gabi is the son of Rebbe, who was very rich. So therefore, like he's very stingy. Like when you have a liver available, like he'll eat it, even though most people would think liver, yuck, why should I bother? Or according to the first explanation, it came from an animal where you don't even know whether it's kosher or not. But nevertheless, the ashirin mekamtin, you have the rich people tend to try to save. They know the value of a dollar basically, so they try to save it. Okay.
Is it true?
Yeah, a lot of times you have.
Yeah.
Okay. Onward. Okay, so now let's talk about, so we said at any rate that there is a Mishnah later that says that you have to have a kezayis. So let's talk about where should that kezayis be. So the Gemara tells us by way of a story. One time an army unit, Pulmusa, Rashi says, Chayil Ashilten, means the army of the government's army. Well, Pulmus, it's actually a Greek word. Polemos means Polemos is Greek for a war.
For war?
Yeah. So Pulmus in Gemara terminology means like a military unit or something. So they came to Pumbedisa, and therefore, so Orkul Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. So Rabba and Rabbi Yosef ran away because they didn't really, whenever you have an army in town, there's always troubles likely to follow. Pogubahu Rabbi Zera, in Pumbedisa, in Babel. No, that's why Rashi makes a point. He says, Chela Shilton. We're not talking about a foreign army had invaded. We're talking about the army of the local army itself. The local army itself had come to Pumbedisa, but still it means, in other words, that they're going to require, people are going to have to be performing services for them and baking them and making them food, as a Gemara in Beisa that mentions that and other such things. So Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef decided to get out of town for the time being. Pogubahu Rav Zera, so Rav Zera met up with them. He didn't have to run away for reasons that we'll explain in a second. Amalahu, so he says to them, Arikai, fugitives, you who are running away, Kazayas Sh'amru B'makam Mara. I want you to learn this halacha from me, that the kezayis that we're talking about, that has to be left of the liver, has to be in the area of the mara, of the gallbladder. So we talked about the other day that the gallbladder hangs off the liver. So therefore, so Rav Zera is informing them, you should know, when we say in the next Mishnah that you have to have a kezayis or more left of the liver, that kezayis can't just be anywhere. It has to be in the area where the gallbladder hangs off the liver. So here you can see a black and white diagram of it, but here actually this is a picture of a liver of a deer, so it's not really a good thing for that, for the deer, as it happens, doesn't actually have a gallbladder. Nevertheless, though, the point is, so we're gonna talk about, there's a couple of areas here. Here's a different diagram to show. So there's a liver over here, right behind the diaphragm, as we're gonna say in a second, it's attached to the diaphragm, and then you have hanging off the end of it over there is the gallbladder. The diaphragm is a sheet of muscle that separates on above it. Above it, you have the lungs and the heart and whatever, and below it, you have the stomachs and liver and whatever. When you breathe in and out, the diaphragm moves up and down. That's how your lungs have room to expand and contract. I guess so, yeah.
Okay. But you can live without the...
You can live without most of the liver. That's
no, not only most of the liver.
The gallbladder? No, yeah. That's why we said before, if the gallbladder is punctured, we said an animal is chafe. Except for, obviously, again, you have deer, for example, don't have a gallbladder. Okay, that's how Hashem created them. They're able to live without it. That's fine. First of all, not necessarily are all the terephis the same in people as in animals. Tosfos talks about that at the beginning of the parak. Number two, nishtanu ativim. You have certain areas of human and animal physiology that are different nowadays than they were then. We're going to see an example actually on other days. And third of all, just because something the Rambam points out in Hilchos Shechita, which I mentioned at the beginning of the parak, that just because modern medicine says something is curable doesn't make a difference. That at the time when the Gemara was composed, that's when the halacha was determined that such and such things are treifa, and that's how it is. Even if later on they find a cure.
If the cow is, they open the cow, you don't find the gallbladder.
That is true. Right. There is actually an interesting. I think there is actually a little interesting thing in that. It's considered essential for life. Yeah, I think apparently, well, the pastures. I mean, unless we know otherwise. But we had on Def Mem Gimel, we had a proof. We were discussing the question: if the gallbladder has a hole, is it kosher or not? We said Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda says it's straight. The Chachamim disagree. We said the Chachamim pointed out that you have a pasuk over there where Eeyore describes that my gall is spilling out on the ground, meaning that his gallbladder was punctured, and yet he's still living to tell about it. And Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda says, okay, in Maskir and Mice and Nissen, that's different. There was a special mess over there that Hashem told the Sultan to make sure to keep him alive no matter what. So yeah, but ordinarily we would assume it's the same. And by the way, you actually have some of the Rishonim who discuss over here. So we're talking about if the liver was removed. The question is, what if you have an animal that to begin with was born without a liver? So now the Rambam takes the view like this. You have two of the eight, we have eight major categories of treifas that we mentioned at the beginning of the paragraph that Ulla mentioned. One of them is chasera and the other one is netula. So the Rambam understands the difference to be netula means that it existed there originally and then it was removed, whereas chasera means that it was missing to begin with. So therefore, if we're saying over here nifla hakoved, the implication would seem to be that if the animal was born without a liver, then it's still kosher. The Rambam doesn't say so in so many words, but that seems to be the implication. On the other hand, the Rashba disagrees with that and says that no, if the Rashba says though that the main thing might not be so much the liver itself. Fine. I mean, if the Rambam seems to be implying that an animal could somehow survive without a liver, then fine. I mean, the Rambam is a doctor. You know, he presumably knew what he was talking about. But the verse would be because of the gallbladder, because the gallbladder hangs off it, and therefore no liver means no gallbladder. So that might be reason to pass the word if it was born without a liver, not so much because of the liver itself. Somehow there'd be some other organ that would be taking over the function of it, apparently, but because there's no gallbladder. Just the opposite of modern medicine. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, Rav Zera is informing them that this kezias has to be in the place of the morrow. So first of all, by the way, we have to ask, why is Rav Zera calling them fugitives? Then why didn't Rav Zera himself have to run away when there's an army coming? Tosfos explains, based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that says that Rav Zera's father was a tax collector. So therefore, like he had a tax collector, so therefore Rav Zera and his family had protectia. They had an in with the government, so therefore Rav Zera is not too worried when there's soldiers coming to town that they're going to cause him and his family. So he didn't. That's the point. Rabbi and Rav Yosef are leaving. Rav Zera is meeting them and say, hey, you guys running away. I want to teach you halacha. So why isn't he running away with them? That's what Tosfos would say.
Now, the houses,
yeah, they would take over the houses. They'd demand that people put them up, quartering soldiers. People would make food for them. Maybe not. Maybe he didn't have enough protection to protect them. What's the deeper idea behind this? That they're running away and he's teaching them a halacha. So on a simple sense, the Rambam says, first of all, we see two things from this. First of all, the Rambam says we see that in that time it was a little hard to be a Talmud Chacham in Bavel as compared. Conditions were worse at that time in Bavel than in Eretz Yisrael, that Rambam says. Therefore, this is a period of Rabbi Yochanan and Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, you find in various places in Shas that they knew more in Eretz Yisrael than they did in Bavel in those days. The other day, we had Rabbi Yochanan commenting on something that Rabbi Yonasan, who was originally from Bavel, said, and Rabbi Yochanan being very impressed that someone from Bavel knows this, because in that time, there's a Talmid Chacham of Bavel, we're having a hard time of it because of things like this, because of soldiers and whatever. But the other thing that Rambam says is we see from this that even when people are running away from soldiers, they're still obligated to learn Torah. And therefore, Rav Zera is telling them, even though you're running away, let me teach you halacha and you can learn it as you're going. That Rambam himself, by the way, lived through that kind of thing himself. He wrote a Lord. He writes about his own Pirush HaMishnayos, for example. He composed large parts of it on a boat while he and his family were escaping from one place to another. Yeah. Well, so now there's more lessons also. So now you have
more lessons. Aside from the one thing you see is that when you have a sakana, a goy shami comes, you don't stay and say,
one second. So first of all, Rabbi Yonasan Ibishit talks about in one of his Torah in Placey, he says the deeper meaning, Placey, that's the name of his sefer.
Yeah,
he has a sefer called Crazy or
Placey.
Crazy or Placey, yeah. It's a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. Anyway, so he comments that the deeper idea of this is they're running away because they say, look, if things are going to be hard in Pumbedissa, we can't really learn Torah over there, so we better get out of town. So Rav Zeira is telling them, don't you realize, Kezayis Sh'om Rav Makam Mara, the place where the main thing of the liver is where you have the bitterness of the gall of the Mara. Therefore, in other words, don't be running away because it's bitter and hard to learn Torah over there. Stick it out. That's how it is in Golos, that you may be in a tough situation, but you still stick it out and learn. And then you have various other Achronim talk about, Chassam Sofer talks about in one of his drashas. He takes that, but in a slightly different way. He says what it is that the argument between them is Rabba and Rav Zeira are taking the view, okay, but we can't daven for the people in peace if we're going to be harassed by the soldiers ourselves. We can't protect them with our system of learning Torah. Better we should get out of town to someplace more peaceful, and then we'll be able to help them Baruchnius from there. Whereas Rav Zeira is telling them, no, you're wrong, Kezayis Sh'om Rav Makam Mara. The Kezayis ought to be where the Mara is, where the difficulties are. You should be staying together with the people. And Nachman Sofer goes on to say, you have some Rabbanim did one way, some did the other way. He mentions that the Noda B'Yehuda, for example, there was a period when times were hard in Prague, and the Noda B'Yehuda was the Rav over there for many years, wanted to leave town, and then the Sibur over there prevailed on him to stay, that this way he should be together with them and help them over there rather than, we see, and in various other times, you see during the Holocaust, for example, you have, for example, on the one hand, you had Rabbi Nachum Zemba and Rabbi Hanan Wasserman and many others who could have gotten away but didn't, and then you have others like the Friedrich Rebbe and others who, and the Gerer Rebbe who managed to get out in order that they can be able to help what they can from, yeah, in order that, the point is, they still didn't say, you know what, I'm not going to, okay, the point is, the Friedrich Rebbe and the Gerer Rebbe and others didn't say, okay, but you know what, don't put in all that effort, I'll stay over here, but they felt, like we're saying, like Rebbe and Rav Zeira over here, better we should get out of the area and be able to help from where we are able to help rather than there. And then on the other hand, you had other great tzaddikim of that time, for example, you mentioned Rabbi Nachum Zemba and Rabbi Hanan Wasserman, and you have many others who stayed put. Some did, some didn't, but the point is, they didn't, I don't know. You have Rabbanim and Rabbeim or whatever who lived through the Holocaust and lived to tell about it, right? So not all of them. All right. Anyway, the point is you have those two different approaches. We're saying based on our Gemara over here, we're saying there is a validity to both approaches. There is a validity to Rabba and Rav Zeira's approach of running away, and there is a validity to Rav Zeira's approach of staying put. All right. Let's go on.
There's two of them that leave and one of them that stays. Are you saying the halacha is that...
No, it's not a matter of halacha. It's not a matter of halacha. We're saying Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef's position is valid, that if you can leave and be able to help the Gashmias, the Baruchnias from outside the area, then do that. And on the other hand, you have Rav Zeira's, that if you, on the other hand, maybe you would do well to stay and then be together with the people and then help them from the inside. Okay, it's two different... All right, let's go on. Okay. So anyway, so he's telling them...
Other part of Shas where this problem is
not specifically. I don't know specifically in so many words, but this is the Chassam Sofer explains that this is the deeper meaning of the discussion between them. All right, let's go on. Okay, Rav Ader Ba'ava Omer. Rav Ader Ba'ava says the Kezayis doesn't have to be where the gallbladder is. Rather, the Makom Shehi Chaya. Rather, the Kezayis has to be in the place where the liver lives. Now, what does that mean? There's two explanations what that means. That's the sirka. We'll get to that soon. No, so we had Rav Zeira telling us it's the place of the gallbladder. We have Rav Ader Ba'ava telling us it's the place where it lives. So what do we mean where it lives? So you have two explanations what it means. Rashi brings two explanations. One is that it means where it touches the kidneys. So you have inside the animal, you have the liver over here. One part of it touches the kidney. The front of it is by the diaphragm over there, and then the back end of it touches one of the kidneys. So according to one explanation in Rashi, which he says he heard from his Rebbein, that is considered the place of Ischayus. And then Rashi himself says a different explanation that it means the place where it's attached to the diaphragm. You have, again, you have the diaphragm, you have that sheet of muscle over there that separates the front of the animal from the back of it, basically, and the liver is attached along the surface of that. So therefore, that would be a second explanation of what Makam Chayusa is. Here, you can see it over here also. There's the diaphragm, and you can see the liver is attached here. It goes against the kidney back around over here, yeah. Well, in this particular picture, you don't see the kidneys, but actually you do. There's the kidney, and there's the liver is coming, is pretty much touching it. Okay, so we have two different opinions in the Gemara, and then within one of those opinions, we have two opinions in Rashi to explain what the place is where you need the kazayis. Amar Papa, so the Papa says, as he often does in Shas, Hilkach, therefore, we need to make a compromise. But in a kazayis for Makam Maro, or in a kazayis for Makam Shikhaya. So you need a kazayis in each of those two places in order for the animal to not be tricked. Otherwise, if you only have a kazayis where you have the gallbladder, like Rav Zera, or only the Makam Chayusa, like Rav Adav Ava, then you have a suffix. And then, given that we have the two explanations in Rashi, which is the Makam Shechaya, the result is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you need a kazayis in each of those three places that's left over in order for one by the gallbladder, one by the diaphragm, and one by the kidney.
Well, we said the diaphragm is close to the kidneys, isn't it?
No, not at all. The diaphragm is over here, and the kidneys are over here. So that's the result. And halacha is you need a kazayis in each of those three places. So now Rav Yirmiyah asks about that. Now we're assuming all this time that the kazayis is like one solid piece. What about mislakit mahu? What about if the kazayis is not a whole piece of a kazayis? You have a little bit here and a little bit there. They're in the same general area. They're in the area of the mara or the area of the diaphragm or whatever, but it's not one complete kazayis in each place. Or kirasua mahu? What if that piece of liver that's left is like a strip, like a long skinny strip, what would be the din? And Boy Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi asks a further question, Kazayis Merudad Mahu, what would be the din if the Kazayis is flattened out, which Rashi explains, flattened out means even worse than Rasua. Rasua means it's like a long skinny thing. It's a long skinny thing, like a belt, sort of. Merudad would be even more than that, it's like flattened out completely. So then would it still count towards the kazayis?
But it's attached.
Well, that's the question. On the one hand, it's attached, but on the other hand, it's flattened out. So Rasua would be like a belt, sort of. So it's got a certain thickness to it. On the other hand, flattened out would be like that. It's like a cornflake or something. Yeah. And the answer is tefil. We don't know, so therefore we'd have to be machmir in those cases.
Whether it's flattened
or whether it's like a belt or whether it's whatever. Okay. Next, Rav Zirka asks Rav Ami, what about a case like this? Nigdalzala covid, what happens like this? Usually the liver is tightly attached along the whole length of it is attached to the diaphragm. What about nigdalzala covid? What if the attachment of the liver is weakened, like it's shaky, it's like ripped off a little bit here, a little bit there. But it's still sort of partially attached, a little here and a little there, to the diaphragm. You can see an illustration over here. So that's the question. In other words, none of the actual liver itself is missing. It's not like the previous cases where we only have a kazayis left. Right. Here you have the whole liver is there, but instead of being tightly attached to the diaphragm along its whole length, you have like it was one attachment here and one here and one here and whatever, and the rest of it has been torn off. What would be the din? Amrlay, so Rav Ami answers, dildulza en yadeh mahu. I don't know what this dildul is, what this weakening is that you're asking about. The fact of the matter is, ilamanda omar b'makam mara, according to the opinion that you need a kazayis where the gallbladder hangs, you have a kazayis over there because none of the actual liver is missing. Ilamanda omar b'makam shechaya ha'yika, if you're going to say that the kazayis needs to be where the liver lives from, you also, because again, the whole liver is intact, so the fact that it's partially detached from the diaphragm is neither here nor there. The animal's still kosher. As long as you have the as long as you have a kazayas in each of those two or three places, then the animals.
Seems obvious from what you said before.
Okay, he thought
three areas.
Okay, he thought maybe something else. He thought maybe there's another din that the liver has to still be attached tightly to the diaphragm, and if not, then not. Okay, so I don't know how he came to that.
We said we need two places.
Okay, nevertheless, Rav Zvika argued maybe there's a different issue over here. Maybe he thought to say that Nekra of a Mokomis Harbor that it has ripped off from many places. So, especially, brings over here in one of the notes over here from the Tavor Shur that, like this, if you say that, remember, Rashi had two different explanations what Mokom Chayusa is. The one way of looking at it would be, let's say that realize the liver is usually attached in two places, attached to the diaphragm, and then one end of it is attached to one of the kidneys. So the Tavor Shur explains like this. According to the first explanation of Rashi, the question would be like this. What if the part that's supposed to be attached to the kidney is completely detached from there? The only place where it's attached now is to the diaphragm. Well, would it be kosher? And Rami answers him, it's not the important point, it's not that it has to be attached to the kidney. The point is just that you have to have a kazayas of that part of the liver still around. And you do.
Yeah, but we knew that.
No, we didn't. That's the point. Because we thought, Rav Zvika thought, according to that first explanation, that if we're saying you have to have a kazayas by the kidney, well, if it's not by the kidney because it's been detached from the kidney, then maybe no good. And Rav Ami answers him, the point is not that it's attached, it's attached to the kidney. The point is there has to be a kazayas at that end of the liver. So even if that particular end of the liver is not actually touching the kidney, you're still okay. And then according to the second explanation.
So it has to be at the end of the liver without touching the kidney?
That's the point. It doesn't necessarily have to be touching the kidney.
So that's the chiddush then. So we said before that the chayus comes from being in contact with the kidney.
We didn't say it comes, no. That is the place called makom chayusa, but it doesn't mean it gets its chayus from the kidney. That particular part of the liver is called makom chayusa, because that particular part is more vital to life than the other parts of the liver. I don't know why. The other explanation also would be same idea. In other words, that if we say that makom chayusa is where it's attached to the diaphragm, so if it's not completely attached anymore, so is that still considered that it's makom chayusa? And again, the answer is as long as it's not completely attached, then it's okay because it's still basically hanging where it's supposed to from the.
So you don't need a kazayas to be attached.
Since you have the whole liver attached, so inevitably it means you have much more than a kazayas over there, as opposed to the previous cases where most of the liver tissue was missing and all you have left is a kazayas. That would be
a different question. I'm asking not how much liver you need. I'm not saying how much attachment to the liver.
Apparently, there's no problem. Even if you have a small attachment, much less than a kazayas. Apparently, as long as you have a kazayas of the liver itself, that even if it's not tightly attached to the diaphragm anymore, so that would have been Rav Zvika's problem, and that's what Rav Ami answered.
Okay. This would be considered glass or regular.
Well, I don't know. Maybe not. So, you know, I mean, glass primarily refers to issues with the lungs, which is actually what we're going to discuss next. In general, I mean, these would be among the cases where you have a shayla, but we said the other day that if you have a shayla where the halacha is clear in the sources, then even a baal nefesh doesn't have to worry about not eating from it. So here we have a clear answer over here. That's not an issue. So, yeah.
That last one is the halacha.
As long as you have the kazayas in each of the three places, then we don't worry if it's not attached to the kidney, and we don't worry if it's not completely attached to the diaphragm, as long as it's still partially attached. Okay. Fine. Then we said Horeya Shenifa. Then we said, the next one in the Mishnah, we said if the lung was punctured. So now we're going to be talking for a while over here about details involving the lung. The details involving the lung are pretty complicated. In Shulchan Aruch, you have, in Hilchot Treifas, you have most of the organs. You have one, maybe two simonim devoted to details of Treifas in that particular organ. The lungs, you have five. Lamed Hey, Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, Lamed Ches, Lamed Ches. Gives you an idea. But you have to be bodic then, because in the lung, more than any other part of the body, it's very common for there to be a reyesa, for there to be reason for suspicion that there's a problem, in particular based on the matter of Sirchus, which we're going to start talking about on Amud Bey.
So the Shechtim, when they, after they kill the animal, they shech the animal, do they check the liver and the lung?
They don't usually check the liver unless there's reason to suspect the problem. That's one of those things, unless there's a reyesa, because not common, right. But with the lungs, the way they work it nowadays, the way they work it is like this. They first start by, after they've shechted the animal and they hang it up, the first thing they do is, while the lungs are still inside the animal, the shochet or the boidik or whatever, reaches in and feels the lungs while they're in place. It's it's called Bdikas Pnim. And the point of that is that that way, if there, the point is, in particular, if there's any tirchus between it and adjacent and adjacent parts,
which
we're going to see,
a sircha
means an attachment. It means like there's something. It's sort of like a ligament, sort of like a ligament, but it's not a natural thing. It's a, in English, it's called an adhesion, actually, where you have some part of the lung. There's like a fiber that goes from one part of the lung to another, which we'll discuss, or from the lung to some other part of the to some other area in the chest cavity.
Can be in any tissue.
Well, in principle, I suppose you could have stirchus in other tissues as well. And in fact, you have Mepharshim talk about it here, based on we're going to learn on Amud Beis what's the idea behind stirchus anyway. But there is the question: would do they have the same effect by other tissues as well? But primarily with lungs, again, you have for various reasons that we're going to talk about soon. They're much more common. Therefore, we have to check for them. And B, possibly they're the only ones where stirchus causes a problem. Anyway, whatever it is, the point is: so first, what they do is they do the Bdikas Pnim. So the guy sticks in what they actually do is the way he describes it over here. They make a couple of slits in the diaphragm, and then the Bodik sticks his hands in up through the diaphragm and feels around the lungs to feel if there's any stirchus over there. Then after that, later on they take out the lungs and they check what the story is with those stirchus. And many times also, as we'll see, many times they have to check them by inflating them and see if there's any puncture.
Inflating the lungs,
yeah, exactly. You pump in air. They have a natural pump to them, right? They have the windpipe goes into them. So you blow in air through there, and then that inflates the lungs, and then you compress
the lung if there's air coming out.
Well, the point is that way you can see if there's air leaks. If there's air leaks, then you know you have a problem.
But once he puts his hands in there,
how do you know it's
nothing?
No,
so if he feels nothing, if he feels no stirchus, then yeah, it means we're pretty good. It means it's much more likely to be glass, but they still eventually are going to take it out and then check it on the outside.
It happened during the shita.
What?
The puncture of the lung.
So if you can have cases where there's reason to think that the lung may have been punctured by the bodic. So in those cases, then the animal's back and not safe. How you tell is not so easy, but part of it depends on where the hole is. Is it back in an area where the guy was doing a lot with his hands, where it's likely that accidentally he may have punctured it, versus it in his area or not? But that kind of thing is going to be the subject of that kind of thing, and all the different issues involving the lung we're now going to start dealing with and deal with over the next couple of blocks. Because the reason is because you want to check whether there are any stirchus there before you remove the lung. If you remove the lung, then there was a stircha that went from the lung to something else, and now you're not going to know because it was ripped off. So therefore, you need that bedikas pnim first in order to feel where exactly, if there are any stirchas going from the lung to something else, where exactly are those? And then the guy makes a note of it and informs the other bodkin later to look at
the between what and what? Between the lungs and the membrane to cover the lungs? Or between the membrane to cover the lungs and the thorax?
Okay, so what the Gemara is going to explain over here, the first line of the Gemara we're going to have over here is that there are two layers to the lung. Now, in modern terms, what you say is what modern medicine considers to be the outer layer of the lung, halacha is not really dealing with. Halacha is dealing with, when we talk about the two layers of the lung, what we mean is basically there's what modern medicine would consider the inner layer of the lung, and then you have underneath that is the actual lung tissue itself. The actual lung tissue itself is made up of a bunch of tiny little air sacs. That's where the blood gets oxygenated in there. And the surface of those little sacs is what the Gemara is going to call the inner membrane. So you can think of it as like you have like an inner membrane made up of the outsides of those sacs, and then above that you have another membrane.
Between the inner membrane and the lung itself.
Right. Well, between that outer membrane and what you have on the inside of the chest, that halacha is not dealing with. That's where the membrane that you have on the inside of the chest, as far as halacha is concerned, is part of the chest itself, not really part of the lung. Yet. Okay. So.
A bit like the brain.
Sort of, and yeah. Well, sort of. I mean, the brain had two. The brain you had the dura matter and the pia matter,
right.
But they are those same ones that modern medicine defines. Halacha also defines as the two membranes of the brain.
Yeah.
The here also, no, because here what you really have, so here where your modern medicine wouldn't consider the outsides of those sacs to be a membrane at all, would consider it part of the lung itself. But halacha is considering it a membrane. Because it, basically, yeah, underneath it is the actual lung, is the actual lung air sac. So, Rav Shmuel and Rav Asi Damri, so Rav and Shmuel and Rav Asi all say, which membrane are we talking about that if it's punctured, the animal's chafe? Karma ilah. That would be the upper, that would be the outer membrane. Again, what modern medicine would consider the inner membrane and what halacha considers the outer one. Others say that what they said is it's actually the lower membrane, the outsides of the air sacs themselves. Amr of Yosef, Faman Yumi, Amr of Nachman, the Simonach, you Simon to remember, he also holds with the opinion that it's the lower one, that's the outsides of the air sacs themselves. So the way to remember is, think of it as Kituna Devarda de Manchabe Rea. Think of it as the reddish, tunic, the reddish piece of clothing, basically, inside which the lung sits. Now, because only the surface of those air sacs is reddish, the membrane on the outside of those is not quite the same color. It's a different color. So therefore, when we talk about the reddish or pinkish one in which the lung sits, then that means the lower membrane. So the Gemara says like this. Let's figure out when we say one or the other. Pshita. Now it's obvious like this. E inkivi lav la inkiv tata. If the upper membrane is punctured, but the lower membrane, I mean the actual lung, the actual air sacs themselves, are still intact, then fine. There's no problem because tata megin. Then we know for sure the lower membrane, the skin around the air sacs themselves will protect them. No air is leaking out. The air sacs themselves are still intact, and you're good. And we know this, Kidderabba. We know this based on what Rabba said. The Amar Rabba, or Rava, it says on the side over here. Hai Reya, if you have a lung, the aglid, where it was peeled off, the entire upper layer was peeled off, and now therefore it looks like Kahina Sumka. Now it looks like a red bait. Because that's the point. We just said the lower inside membrane, the outside of the air sacs themselves looks pinkish. So now if the entire kruma elyon is peeled off, then the whole thing looks very reddish or pinkish.
The inner membrane.
The outer membrane, or what halacha is defining over here is the outer membrane. So you can see you can see an example over here where, as the Gemara is going to point out in a second, that you can have a case where the inner membrane was punctured and the outer membrane is still intact. So when you inflate it, you see a bubble over there, but no actual air comes out. So here the Gemara is saying like this. So Rabba or Rava is telling us that if the outer membrane is removed and therefore the whole thing looks now very bright red, then like
a picture of the outer membrane.
I don't know if there's a picture of that in here. Not sure if there's a picture of that in here. So what it is, you have to remember the lung is made up. Although the lung is spongy because you have a bunch of little air sacs. You have the windpipe goes into there. It divides into two large branches called the bronchi. Each of those branches into smaller and smaller ones. When a person has bronchitis, that's what it is. Those are infected. And then eventually those go into smaller and smaller. Those go into smaller and smaller tubes for air until at the ends all around the outside of the lung, you have little air sacs. And there you have the blood goes over there, and that's where that's where you have oxygen goes into the blood, and that's where carbon dioxide and whatever is removed from the blood in those little air sacs. So here we're talking about the surface of those sacs themselves is called here you have some pictures. So the surface of those sacs itself is called the krum tachton. Called the krum atacha. No, so it is a krum because inside of them you have empty space. So therefore, in that sense, it's the krum. And then above them, you have the krum, the kaumer ilah. You have the upper membrane. So we're saying, if the top one is completely gone, and all you have left is the bottom one, then we know for sure that you're okay. Then we, because Rava tells us, that Rava tells us even if the whole thing is removed, it's okay. So how much more so if there's only a puncture? The question is, in kiv tatov, la in kiv ilah, what about if the lower membrane is punctured? So you have one of those air sacs has a hole in it, but the upper membrane was not punctured. Negin or la negin, that's the question. Does the upper membrane protect it because no air is leaking out, or does it not? Well, pligi bar Rav Acha v'Ravina. Rav Acha and Ravina argue on that point. Chad oma lo megin, v'chad oma megin. One says it doesn't protect, therefore the animal is trace. The other one says that it does protect, and therefore the animal is kosher. And that second opinion that says the hilchasa megin, and the halacha is, it is considered it does protect. The fact that you have
the outer membrane,
right, that's the point. That's why it's important to understand. We're not talking about the outer membrane as modern medicine would define it, because there, if you have, in modern medicine, you have this lung tissue, which includes all the air sacs. Above that, you have outside of that, you have a membrane called the pleura, and outside of that, you have another one that's on the inside of the chest, which is also called the pleura. And usually, the space between them is, I think it's supposed to be filled with void. Okay, whatever it is. Anyway, if you have in modern medicine, if you were to have, if there's a puncture in the outer layer of the lung, then you're going to end up with air, but there's too much air between these two pleura, and it's going to collapse the lung and whatever. Halacha looks at it differently. Halacha looks at it as long as no actual air is escaping from the lung itself, then you're okay. And again, the lung itself, meaning in other words, ignoring the part that's on the chest itself. As far as halacha is concerned, the outsides of those air sacs counts as a membrane, and the thing above that counts as a second membrane. So we have Rav Acha and Ravina are arguing, and the halacha is like the opinion that says that it does protect, and therefore if you have a hole in the inner one but not in the outer one, then it is kosher. High air can get between the air sacs and that.
In the inner one,
but not in the outer one, even though you're going to have some air leaking out from the air sacs in behind the pleura over there, nevertheless, it's still kosher. And we know that, Kiddur Rav Yosef. We know that based on what Rav Yosef says. The Omer Rav Yosef, Hai Reya De Avsha. So what happens, sometimes you inflate a lung to check whether there are any holes in it, and you hear, and it's making a noise that you need to know. Is it making a noise because there's actual air escaping from it, or what's going on? So, Iyad in and Hecha Avsha. So if we know where the noise is coming from, Maisvin and Allah God, Avsha means a noise, Maisvin and Allah Gadfa, a Ruka, a Gila, we put on that particular place, we put something light, like Gadfa is a feather, a Ruka, a little bit of spit, a Gila, or a straw, Im Vasasa, and if we see that the saliva bubbles a little bit because of the blowing up, or the same thing if we see that the feather or the straw moves, trefa, then we know it's trefa, because then we know there's a hole that goes straight through, that goes through both letters. The eloi, if not, trefa, then it would be kosher because no air is coming out. So why are you hearing noise? So that's the verse. In other words, because you have the air sac, one or another of the air sacs is punctured, therefore you have air getting between one layer and the other. But nevertheless, it's not coming out. The lung as a whole is still intact. Therefore, the air escaping between the layers over there above the air sac, below the pleura, is not going to kill the animal.
Yeah, but the air that comes out, little by little, compresses the lung. It doesn't matter.
But apparently not. Apparently not enough for it to be fatal. Maybe over a long time. But remember, a trefa is la halacha. A trefa is where it's not going to survive 12 months. I guess with a small leak like that, it's not. The e lo yadin and hechav. So now all that is, if you know where the noise is coming from, then you check like that. What if you hear the noise and you can't figure out where it's coming from? So what do? My sin and misiklata demaya pshuri. We bring a basin full of lukewarm water. And we put the lung, after it's inflated, inside that basin. And that way, when you go nowadays to a tire shop, they do the same thing to find where there's a leak in a tire. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, now why do you have to use warm water? You shouldn't use hot water, because hot water will make it shrink. And therefore, Rashi says, therefore, if you have any hole over there, it might cause the hole is going to get closed up. So therefore, you can't tell.
That's a cold.
Hot air usually makes things expand, but I guess maybe over here it would make that's the idea. It makes the lung tissue around the hole expand, therefore the hole closes up. Bikriri loy, and on the other hand, you don't want to put it in cold water, dimitaushi, because then that will make the lung stiff. And then Rashi points out the problem of the lung being stiff is what would happen, you're gonna blow it up now. And if the outer layer has gotten stiff from the cold, it might rip when you blow it up, even though there was no problem with it to begin with. So to avoid that, to avoid making the animal trach when it's unnecessary, you're right. You wouldn't know. Therefore, you should use lukewarm water. Elam with binin b'pshuri. So what we do is, again, we take the lung before we inflate it, rather. We put it in warm water. V'natchinala, and we then blow it. Pshuri means warm water. V'natchinala, and we blow it up over there in the water. If now it bubbles, because now we know that there's a hole in the inner and the outer layer, the kshera, and if not, then it's kosher. Why? Because in that case, it means tata, why are we hearing a noise when we blow it up? Tata in kivilala in kiv, it means only the lower layer, only the outside of the air sac has gotten a hole in it. The upper layer, the inner pleura, has not been punctured. The fact that it's making noise, zika de beni beni, it's because you have air going between those two layers, and therefore that's making a noise, but that's not that won't make the animal trach. Again, maybe long term it would be a problem, but short term, at least as far as trach, it's not a problem. Okay. So, more dinim on lungs. Ahini sumka de yavish gildi simen, a simen for the next four dinim that we're going to learn from Rava. These are each key words from four dinim that Rav is going to teach us about dinim involving lungs.
Sumka, the
color? Sumka means the color. It means red, right? Ahini means date. Sumka means red. Diyavish means dry. And gildi means like layers or peeled. So we'll see. Okay, good. So getting back to number one, we said before, Omar Rava, Hai Reya de Iglit Kahina Sunka Kshera, we said if the entire outer layer was peeled off the lung, and therefore now it looks red, like a date, then it's kosher. As long as air doesn't escape, right? So that's number one. By the way, usually when the Gemara uses the word gufa, usually it's because previously, we mentioned it incidentally, and now we want to deal with it in more detail. Uh-huh. Over here, this is one of the rare cases. Rabbi Akiva Eger references. This is one of the rare cases where we're not doing that. We're only mentioning it again because we're going to mention other dinim from Rava as well in this connection. Mm-hmm. But the din itself, that's it. It's a one line din, which there's no further discussion of it. Okay. But Omar Rava. Rava says second din as far as lungs. If part of the lung turns red, and we mean more red than it would have been just the outer layer that we were talking, the inner layer that we were talking about before.
Shera,
then the animal is kosher. Kula trefa, but if the whole thing becomes red, then it's trefa, says Rava.
If part of it is red,
then Rava is saying it's kosher. But if all of it becomes red, then it's possible.
Why is it no same
one? One second. Okay, so Omale Ravina LaRava, so Ravina says to Rava, what's the logic? Miksasa my time, why are you telling me that if only part of it became red, it's kosher, the pastures must be dahadra baria, because eventually it will be able to heal. Yes, there's something wrong with it right now, the fact that it's red, maybe it means blood vessels burst, whatever it means exactly, but apparently if it's not the whole thing, then you're saying it'll still be able to heal, therefore it's not trace. Well, so what? Kulanami hadra baria. So, and if that happens along the whole, on the whole surface of it, the pashtus could also heal. Mi loy tanya, after all, wouldn't it be similar to a case that we learn in a different area of halacha? We have like this, when it comes to Shabbos, usually you have, now we know, one of the malachas on Shabbos is shoichet, which can mean killing or shechting an animal, but a tolda of it is called choyvel, it's called wounding an animal. Now you have a difference like this. You have a difference like this. There are certain kinds of creatures, Rashi explains based on the Gemara and Shabbos, there are certain kind of creatures, for example, frogs, that have a very soft skin. So if you wound them on Shabbos, you're only chayev for doing a malacha on Shabbos only if blood actually comes out. Because since their skin is so soft and thin, if no blood actually came out, then it means you didn't really do anything to them. If you just slapped them or whatever. But when you have, with the Shmoina Shrotzim, which have harder skins, then, the other way around, with a frog or whatever, even if blood doesn't come out, a person will be chayav for choyvel for them because their skin is soft, and therefore when the skin turns red, it means that already blood vessels underneath it have burst, and therefore the person is chayav. When it comes to the Shmoina Shrotzim, only if blood actually comes out. Is the person chayev, because they have tougher skin, so therefore just because the skin turned red doesn't mean that anything was actually broken. Anyway, the point is, so we say in that connection with shar shkotzim uramasim, when it comes to other creepy crawly creatures, ad sheyetzim mehem dam, a person is chayev only if blood actually came out of them. So therefore, by the same logic over here, if blood is not actually coming out of the lung, it's just red. Then it shouldn't be traced. It'll be able to recover.
Like a person.
Yes, similar. So you're going to argue, well, okay, why are you comparing to other shrotzim or amosim? Maybe compare the case of the lung specifically to the shmoina shrotzim, the Tanya, where there we learn nistra hadam afishla yata, that there the person is chayev even if you have a bruise, where blood collected in one place, even if it didn't actually come out. Nistra means
bruise.
Collected. It's collected, and the result is you have a bruise. So that's okay. So I said it wrong before. What it is like this. With the other, with for example, frogs or whatever, there's no such thing as you bruise them, you're chayev. Either blood came out and the person's chayev, or no blood came out and he's potter. With the Shmoina Shrotzim, you have an intermediate thing called choyvel, where he bruised them, where you have a blood clot or whatever under the skin, because they, yeah, a contusion, because they have harder skin. Certainly, the Shmoina Shrotzim in particular, the Shmoina Shrotzim, the Choyla, the Achbar, the Sov, there's different opinions what exactly those are, but we're talking specifically the Shmoina Shrotzim. So, yeah, the Choyla, which is a weasel or a marten or some creature like that, an Achbar is a rat or a mouse or something, a Sov, Rashi says is an animal similar to a frog, so maybe like a toad, or a different translation is that it's a turtle, whatever. All of these have tough enough skins that it's possible for there to be a bruise. It's possible for there to be blood collected under the skin where the person is already chayev for on Shabbos for having caused that, because what it means is, in other words, that you have the under layer of the skin has gotten broken, and that's why you have blood coming over there. It just didn't come out because the outer skin is tough. So the same thing you're going to argue over here, that maybe you should compare the lung to the Shmoina Shrotzim, and therefore you're telling me that once it's completely red, maybe it's not going to recover, just like with these things. I mean, eventually an animal recovers from a bruise, but it takes a long time, though. You know, that blood that came out in the bruise over there is not going to be reabsorbed. And the Tanya, that we learn in a Braith, the Nitzra Hadam, that's where if the blood is collected under the skin, Apophishalayot, even if it didn't actually come out from the skin, the person is still Chayev. Well, if you're going to compare them to that, Ihochi Afilim Ksot Anami, then the same din should be if you have part of the lung that happened to you. So why are you, Rava, making a distinction between part of the lung and the whole lung? Ella Loishna. So obviously, therefore, Ravina says, it must be there's no difference between part of it or all of it. Now, what do we mean? No difference in which direction. Tosfos learns that Rabbeinu Hananel learned that it means in either way the animal would be traced. Now, we're going to learn later on, and I'm dying on my base, we're going to learn that there are certain colors that if the lung turns those colors, or parts of it turn that color, it's still kosher, and one of them is red. Rabbeinu Hananel would explain, Tosfos says, that it's like this. If you have, it may look red before you inflate it, but then when you inflate it and it stretches out, it looks whitish, it turns a more pale color, that would be the case that we're saying later on that's kosher. Here we're talking about where even you inflate it and it still looks red. Then it would be possible, it would mean that blood vessels have broken over there and therefore the lung is not going to heal.
There's a hole there?
It could mean there's a hole, but not necessarily a hole per se. It just means that it just means that the lung has been damaged enough that it's not going to heal. That's your Ben Hananel.
Okay.
Yeah. On the other hand,
on the surface of the lung.
Yeah. On the other hand, Tosfos.
What about in the inside of the lung?
Is
there a collection of blood?
I don't know. That maybe we'll deal with later. I don't know. We haven't gotten to that yet. Okay. Anyway, Tosfos points out that on the other hand, Rashi and the Bahag and the Rif and a number of other Rishonim hold that Loishna means it's kosher either way. Doesn't change. Even if you have the entire outside surface of the lung is red, we're saying over here that Ravina is saying there's no reason to distinguish between part of it and all of it. The animal will still be kosher.
Okay.
Onward. So that was Rava's second din. He had said that if part of it became red, then the animal is trace, and Ravina is telling him there's no reason to distinguish between part of it and all of it. Okay. Din number three of Rava's, V'omad Rava, Re'a she'yov she'miksasa treifa. If part of the lung dried out, then the animal is treif. And basically, by the way, you have to realize that, I mean, in the Mishnah we just mentioned that if the membrane of the lung is punctured, basically what it boils down to, Rashi explained near the beginning of the Perek, that all of these things that we're describing over here are all like subcategories, or like tulbas of that. Because if you have these various things that we're mentioning over here, such as now we're saying that part of it dried out, it means eventually that part's going to be punctured, or it means already now it's considered as though it's missing, and therefore the animal is straight. Okay. So if part of it became dry, it's straight. The kama, what do we mean dry? How dry is dry? Amar Rapafi, Mishmei the Rava, Kadesh, the Porech, the Tziporen. If it's dry enough that it can be crushed with a fingernail, then that it can be broken with a fingernail, that means dry. And Shulchan Aruch, by the way, mentions a related thing. If you have, so it can also be, you don't even have to see that it's crumble you with the fingernail. If it's so dry that if you make a scratch on it with a fingernail, the scratch will be noticeable afterwards, then also it means yaksha.
It doesn't have to be because outside you normally would be inside would be more moist.
Well, maybe. I mean, the whole lung usually should be moist because it's basically spongy. It's supposed to have air sacs.
The
yavsha itself means that part of it became dry.
Dry means moist.
Yeah. That's what we just said. If it's dry enough that it can be crumbled with the fingernail, or that it can be marked with the lung. Yeah, the lung tissue. You could have maybe it. I don't know. I don't know what exact medical condition it would represent, but whatever. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Kaman, okay, which opinion would this follow? This is the definition of dry is when something is dry enough to be crumbled with the fingernails? The answer is Rabbi Yosi ben Amshulam. That would follow Rabbi Yosi ben Amshulam's opinion in a different context. Like this. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, or it's not, it's actually a Mishnah in Bechoris. Now we have, when it comes to the mumim of a Bechor, the mumim of any kardashim that would make it that it's full lamb of kardashim. And in the case of bechor, it means that you can shecht it and then that you can shecht it and eat it outside the Beit Mikdash. So one of the mumim is, it says over there, when the animal's ear is dry, and the Mishnah says, Ezehi Yivesha, what is the definition of dry for that purpose? It's she'im tinokta ve'enim asiyat tipas dam. If it's so dry that if you were to puncture it, no blood, a drop of blood wouldn't come out. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yosi ben Amishulam, Omer. Rabbi Yosi ben Amishulam says, no. Yavsha Yivesha Kadeshite Nifrechas Tzipporen. Dry means that it's so dry that it can be crumbled with a fingernail. So if we're saying over here that that's the definition of Re'a Sheyavsha, it sounds like we're following only Rabbi Yosi ben Amishulam. And why should that be? Shouldn't we be following the Chachamim? Shouldn't we be saying that dry, that they say over there that in the case of the ear, dry means that it's so dry that blood won't come out. So why not, now that's less than being crumbled with a fingernail. So why don't we say over here that if a part of the lung is so dry that no blood will come out when you pierce it, then it means that the animal is straight. Why are we using Rabbi Yosi ben Amishulam's definition, which is more lenient, which comes out more lenient, basically?
Hey, similar. I mean, how do you know there's no blood that come out by?
No. You could have me pierce it, and then no blood will come out, but it's still hard. It's still got substance in it, versus when it was dries out even more than that. Yeah. The answer is no. Afilu tema rabbanan. No, you could say that Rapapi's definition, Rapapi Meshmedirava's definition, even works according to the rabbanan. Because it's like this. Gabi oizen bechor, because when it comes to the ear of a bechor, dekashalit bezika, where you have the wind and the outside air is able to affect it because it's on the outside of the animal. Loihad rabbaya. So what the Chachamim say, once it reaches the point where it's dry, so dry that no blood will come out, it's never going to heal after that because it's constantly exposed to the air and all the bacteria and all the everything that's in the air, and therefore it's not going to heal. Avareya, but when it comes to the lung, which is inside the body, the like called shalit be'avira, you don't have just any old air. It's not just exposed to any old air. The air that comes there is filtered. basically. So therefore, you could argue hadra bauya. So even if it reaches the point of being so dry that blood won't come out, that doesn't necessarily make the animal trace yet. It may heal, as opposed to what gets it so dry that you can crumble it with your fingernail. Then we know it's never going to recover.
And when it just becomes hard, it's
so when it's just hard enough for blood not to come out, that's not enough to make it trace yet. It's still reversible. It might still recover. Okay, fourth din of rubbers, the Amar rubber, high raya de kaima gildi. If you have lung has like it's covered with like little flakes, little crusts kind of. So it looks like it kind of looks like as if it's like been injured in a lot of places, and then like you have like shingles sort of like roof shingles kind of. Let's see. There's probably a picture. There's probably a picture in here to illustrate it. So you have like that. You have clippers, cane markers. Like you have like little places where like the surface of it seems to be flaking off, sort of. So little flakes like that. Uchmi, and then the various flakes are dry. Or they're different cases actually. One is gildy, where you have these little flake-like things. Another one is where you have black dots all over it. Or chazusa. Another one is where you have different colors in different places on it.
Uchmi
means different black dots. So that would be, that's something else. That's what Tosfos discusses on the basis of it. No, I mean, these being black and white pictures, they can't very well have a picture of different colors. Chazusa means like one part of it is one color and one part of it is another color. So it looks like a patchwork kind of. And now Rashi points out later on Mem Zayin Amud Beis, we're going to learn there are certain colors that if the lung turns those colors, it's trace. And other colors that if it turns those colors kosher. What we mean is over here, among the colors that's still kosher, even if you have like one part of it is one, like one area of it is this color and another one is that color, and the whole thing looks very colorful, but nevertheless all of the colors are kosher. No, so therefore, ksheira, the animal is kosher in all those three cases. In the case of the flakes, in the case of the black dots, or in the case of the different colors.
And that's kosher.
Now, Tosfos points out later on the Gemara talks about the colors, it mentions that one of the colors that would make the lung trace is if it's black. So what are we saying over here? Uchmi, which also means black dots. So Tosfos gives two answers. One of them is that there's a difference between later it's talking about where most of the lung is black. Here we're talking about where there's a dot, where there's various dots of it on a minority of it, or Then Tosfos prefers a second explanation, is that the difference is there it means that actual dark black. Tosfos compares it to the Gemara itself later on compares it to ink, which is a very dark black, as opposed to over here we mean black but not quite such an intense black, like a lighter shade of black sort of. Okay. Fine. More dinim about lungs. Amar amema meshmederova. Ein makifin bebuin. You're not allowed to compare when it comes to blisters. So if you have like this, you suppose you have a blister on the surface of the lung, and when you're checking the lung, you find that not only there's a blister over there, but that blister has a hole in it. Now, Rashi also explains, to answer your question from before, sometimes you can say, you were asking before about the Bojic checking and what if he makes a hole. So if this blister in the hole is in a place where the Bojic moves his hands around it, then fine. It's very likely that he punctured it after the shchita, and then we don't have to worry about it. Here we're talking about, though, where the blister is in an area where the Bojic didn't touch. Therefore, the pasture said it was punctured while the animal was alive. So now what you do is now you can't be sure. It still might have happened after shchita, or it might have happened before shchita. So what do? You would think to do like this. You would think to take another lung or another part of the same lung or whatever that has a similar blister on it, make a hole in that second blister and see whether it looks the same. And then you can tell, because a lot of times you can tell with things with irregularities in an animal whether they happen before shchita or after shchita. So let's say you would find another lung with a blister on it, puncture a hole in that blister, and compare and see if they look the same.
So Rava
is telling us you can't. So Amema is telling us in the name of Rava, ein makifin bebuin. You're not allowed to do that because Rashi explains what it is when you have, later on in our perek, we're going to talk about that there are cases where you can compare one lung to another to see whether they're similar and therefore whether it's safe or not.
Right.
But over here, once you have a blister, the look of it can very easily change. So therefore, it's not a valid test to take another blister and puncture it, because as it is, blisters tend to look different under different circumstances, not just necessarily before and after shita, and therefore you're not going to be able to tell.
Okay.
Another din. V'amar Rava, and Rava said, here's another din, and here we get into the whole matter of sirchus. Hani tauti uni districhan lahadadu. Okay, so before we explain this, we have to talk about the basic structure of the lung. The basic structure of the lungs looks like that. There's black and white pictures. Here's some color pictures. The lung is made up of, we talked about this briefly a day or two ago. The lung is divided into a bunch of large lobes. You have the large ones on the bottom over here, which are, and the Gemara doesn't give them a name, but they're trying to call them the Uma, which means like the mother, because everything else branches out from there. And then you have a total of five, aside from this, which the Gemara will get to later in the Gemara, on the sides you have a total of five unas. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the normal shape of a lung. You can see it also in the black and white pictures over here. The normal way is, as the Gemara itself is going to tell us soon, that the usual way is you have three on one side and two on the other. You have three on the right and two on the left. So now like this, you can have a sircha from one, between one una, between one of those little lobes and the other one. So Rava says, Hani tauti urni disrichan lahadadi, if you have a sircha between one una, between one of those lobes and the next one, less lahubadika, then there's no way to check it. We have to say that the animal is tricked. Now what's the idea?
How would you check it then?
You would think to check it by blowing it up and see if there's a puncture. So now what's the part? Okay, here you have a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. What is the whole problem with sirchus in the first place? Rashi explains like this. The lung, in its natural function, absorbs a certain amount of liquid because you breathe in air and the air has moisture in it. So therefore, what happens is you have like a film of liquid sort of on the surface of the lung. What happens is, therefore, or like right inside, so therefore what you have is if there's a puncture in the lung, some of that liquid leaks out and forms a sircha. So therefore, when there's a sircha, it means there was a hole there. And we learned already earlier in our parak that when you have krum sha'olam achmas maka, that when you have that there was an injury and then there was a hole and later on the hole got sealed up with scar tissue or whatever, it doesn't help. So therefore, Rashi says it's the same thing over here.
You can have sirchas without holes.
Ah, Tosfos asks a number of questions on this. So first of all, Rashi himself points out that what it is later on in the perek, we're going to say that, for example, if you have a sircha between the lung and the muscles between the ribs, then the animal is cautious. And the reason is, basically, Rashi says, because then what it is just like we learned a few days ago about the gallbladder and the liver, that we learned the other day, that if you have the gallbladder has a hole, but the liver covers up the hole, then it's kosher, because then the seal was there right from the beginning. So there it would be the same kind of thing. If there's a hole in the lung, not a sircha, sorry, if you have a hole in the lung immediately next to the chest wall, immediately next to the muscles between the ribs, then fine, because then you have it sealed right away. There was never a hole there that would make the animal trick.
You said just a few minutes ago that the hole that counts is the inner membrane.
We said that it has to be both membranes, actually. We said if only the inner membrane is punctured, we said we can inflate it. No air comes out. There's a hole between the membranes. Doesn't matter. We said if the outer membrane is punctured, even completely peeled off, also it's kosher. It's only possible, it's only safe, if it's punctured from the inner to the outer. So Rashi learns, therefore, that a sircha would be caused by both membranes have been punctured, and therefore you have liquid is leaking out over there and causing a sircha. So Rashi says it's one thing when you have the closure right there, like the chest wall, then fine. But otherwise, if you have it with a hole, and later on a sircha developed, we already established before that if you have a closure of a hole after the fact, then it doesn't help. Now Tosfos has a number of problems with that explanation. Tosfos has a number of problems with that explanation, one of them being that the Gemara is going to start talking about now the difference whether the sircha is between adjacent lobes or non-adjacent ones or whatever. If it's a matter of a hole, then what's the difference? If it's a matter of a hole that was covered up, then what's the difference? So Tosfos learns the other way around. It's not that a sircha means there was a hole there before. The problem is with a sircha of the type that makes the animal trace, as we're going to discuss, the problem is it's not going to last for very long. Inevitably, eventually, that sircha is going to be pulled off. And when it's pulled off, some of the lung is going to go with it. And
well,
therefore,
by movement?
Just as the animal moves around or as it breathes or whatever, you're going to have that sircha. Right now, you have a sircha between the lung and some other part of the lung, or between the lung and the chest wall, or between the lung and the heart or whatever. Eventually, as the animal moves around or as it breathes or whatever, at some point, that sircha is going to get ripped off, and with it is going to come a piece of the lung. So therefore, that's what Tosfos learns. That's the reason.
Lung will just like, leak up.
Well, that's the point. Once you have a piece of the lung is gone, then air is going to leak out.
So
why are they so prevalent? So that's the thing.
Why
does it happen so much?
So that's
the thing. According to Rashi, it would be that there are holes developing and then they get plugged up with these things. According to Tosfos, it would be they happen just because, for whatever reason, you know,
without holes.
They just happen they just happen spontaneously as the animal gets older or whatever. But nevertheless, the point is that they're going to cause problems. So therefore, Tosfos explains that's why we have a difference where exactly the sircha is. If the sircha, as the Gemara is going to say now, if it's between one lobe and the one next to it, then you don't have a problem. It's going to stay put. So therefore, it's not going to happen because they're right next to each other anyway. They're not really moving that far apart.
The air can leak between the two lobes.
No, but according to Tosfos, there was no hole there in the first place. The only problem with the sircha, according to Tosfos, is that afterwards, some part of the lung is going to get ripped off along with the sircha. Well, if they're right next to each other, then there's nothing to get ripped off because they'll stay. It could, but it's much less likely. So therefore,
also no hole, but it's just a single groove, but then it won't come off. There's a hole.
You
don't need a hole.
Yeah, according to Tosfos, you don't need a hole there in order for a sircha to be an issue. Now, but again, also, but there is also, though, I mean, there's a lot of discussion. This is partly why the halachas of lungs are so complicated, because you have different issues over there. Where exactly is the other end of the sircha attached to is one part of it. For example, the Rambam points out that you have some rabbanim who held that if you just have sirchas hanging loose off the lung, not attached to anything else, these other rabbanim, the Rambam mentions, held that the animal is safe. The Rambam says, don't do that. The Rambam says, don't do that. That's wasting Jewish money. If the sircha, if the other end of the sircha is attached to a different part of the lung or to a different part of the chest cavity or whatever, then you have a problem. Apparently, it means if it's just loose, exactly, right, then it shouldn't be a problem. That's right. Right. Okay. So, let's finish up here real quick. So he says, if you have a sircha between one una and the next, Una means the lobes, right? Less lo b'dikka. You can't do a b'dikka because, again, no matter what b'dikka you do, it's not going to be valid. Either it means, according to Rashi, there was a hole, but now the sircha is covering it up, but it's not a valid covering. Or according to Tosfos, that eventually the sircha is going to break off and take some of the lumber.
Between lobes.
Yeah, that's the thing. So that's one second. V'loya moran ela shaloi kisidra. Now, this would only apply if you have that the sircha goes out of order between the lobes. For example, you have over here. In this picture over here, you have, let's say, that you have a sircha that goes from the top lobe to the bottom one and bypasses the middle one. So that's going to be a problem because it'll very easily rip it.
Like a knife.
Right. No, that's not so much that it's like a knife.
When it inflates, it's like it's going to be...
Well, whatever. The point is, in other words, when these parts separate, then it'll rip off. Avocasidron, but if it's in order, if you have one between one, one and the, between the one and the next one, Hainu Rabbi Sayu, then that's normal. That's a normal way of growth. No, it's much less. It's over here. It's much less likely to rip off. No, it's not going to inflate. It's not going to separate so much from here to here. Keep in mind, you also don't have to inflate it more than the animal inflated it while it was alive, right? I mean, you don't have to inflate it like a helium balloon or something. You just have to inflate it as much as you would when the animal was alive. Okay. We gotta go because it's night of time over here, but you have a lot of details in this. Rashi talks about a case over here. What if you have a sircha between one of the unis and the uma, the large lobe next to it? Would that be kosher or not?
So Rashi says
he asked his Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov, and he said it's mutter, but he said some people say it's osur, and Rashi says that his Rebbe gave him reasons for both opinions. Our Gemara is only telling us when you have between one una and the next is it kosher, implying, but if it's anywhere else, then not. On the other hand, the argument is The Gemara itself never uses the word Uma, so therefore there's not necessarily a difference. You know, whatever, it actually goes on with some detail, with a little detail further about it. Tosfos also talks about a little more detail that even when we're talking about adjacent lobes, the stircha would be kosher. Tosfos says only if it's like on the area where one of the lobes rests against the other one, but not like where you have a large space between them. Yeah, not, and also you have a difference whether it's in the half closer to where they separate from the lung versus further out. You have a lot of details in there and a lot of discussion among the Rishonim and Achronim about all the details.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coming back on the issue of the outer membrane and the inner membrane.
Mm-hmm.
I was under the impression that when one is punctured, the inner one, it's treif, the outer one, it's
no.
Kosher.
So what we ended up
then
saying,
you said you need two of them to make.
Okay, so we started by saying we had Rav and Shmuel and Rav Asi had said that if the upper membrane was punctured, then it's treif.
Meaning
and
that's next to the thorax.
Meaning not the one next to the thorax. That one halacha is ignoring. We're talking about the pleura that surrounds the lung itself.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. Right.
Right. Okay, and then we had Ba'amri lo, Kaim Ratata, others say that it's the lower membrane, meaning
the actual
outside of the air sacs themselves, and we ended up saying that it means that actually both of them would have to be punctured for the animal to be traced.
So if the alveoli are not punctured, it's kosher.
If the alveoli are not punctured, it's kosher.
If the alveoli are punctured, but the internal pleura is still intact,
then you're also good. It's going to make a noise when you inflate it. Doesn't matter. No actual air is going out of the lung as a whole. Only if the alveoli and the internal pleura are punctured, then it's true. Right.
No matter regardless how much
it's
punctured, it doesn't matter.
Punctured, we said punctured means even a small hole.
The air,
As long as you inflate it and air comes out,
that's
throw it away.
So you have a growth